Okay. Here we go. Oh, team of available, willing people, as we gather at all our Beltane time. Beltane, as we know, is one of the four cross-quarter holidays, sacred as sacred as the solstices and equinoxes. They're called the four gates of power, where power is especially eager to be invited into the world. And we go, yes, all right, we're up for that. If we don't know what to do, invite in what does. So it's the upwelling of fertile sensuality. And for bonus points, it's also the waxing Buddha's full moon, the sun in Taurus, moon in Scorpio. And the sun on the full moon on the fifth, which will be also true Beltane, is at 14 plus Taurus, where Uranus has been stationing for the last year off and on. Its image is in the midst of a wild storm, a stranger walks into town carrying a large black bag, wearing a silk top hat, the doctor, magician, collaborator with natural forces. I introduced my colleague, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, on that one. There, thank you.
Hello.
Yes,
Grateful to be here.
wizard. Pluto is stationing. We're going to honor that. Mercury is retrograde. We want to return to the underworld. So normally this is an upwelling, but first we go down into the underworld, and we have a super charming song from the Bengtsons. We're going down to jump up and live, and this is especially for Juniper Alloway Ercolano, who was born, on the 18th of April, right before the eclipse. So here's this wonderful song that will tease into pertinence for all of us.
In just a moment.
In just a moment. There we go. We're all backstage together, team.
Oh, I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place. I'm coming back from the other place, from the other place, from the other place.
I said, oh, children, oh, mama. Look what I have found. I am fat with the good shit, mama.
Fat with the good shit.
I'm so fat with the good shit from going underground. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
You made it. You're alive against all odds. You're here and you're alive. I mean, just evolutionarily speaking, the things with odds were really stacked against you. I mean, the whole Big Bang had to happen, and you had to also, like, make it through this week. And if you're here right now, that means you've been born at least two times, because before you were born into the land of air and breathing, you were born as a spark in the dark, in the heart, in the center of your mother's belly. And the first thing you did was split in two, and then you grew, and then you grew. You knew exactly what to do. You sprouted little arm buds, and you sprouted little leg buds, and you were grooving around in there. You were basically like a little Teddy Graham, just grooving around in the ocean of your mother's belly. And then you grew a tail. You lived your life as a baby whale. You had an entire aquatic life cycle, and so did you. And I did too. And you couldn't see your mother, but you could believe in your mother, because you could feel your mother, and you could hear your mother's heart beating like go, 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 against the tiny rhythm of your own heart beating. And that was your first experience of polyrhythm. So if you're a musician, you should call your mother and thank her right now.
Thank you, Mom.
And you may not have been the dream of your mother, if you know what I mean, of your mother. You might never have felt seen by your mother. That's the complicated human being of your mother. But there is another mother. There is also another mother. And there is a mother's 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 father's father's parents' parents' mother's 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 mother's, all the way back to ancient deep water fish, whose only wish was for you to jump up and live, for you to jump up and live exactly as you are, beloved, born under the right star, beloved, exactly as you are, beloved, born under the right star, beloved. But before you got that far, beloved, you got big, And your mother got so beautifully, terribly fat. She said, that's it, honey. I have had enough of that. I have heartburn and hemorrhoids. I can't do this anymore. I can't fit through the door. You're going to have to learn how to breathe. She said, come on in. Come on in, honey. Come on in. Are you hungry? Come on. Come on in. Come on in if you're tired. She said, come on in. Come on in. Come on in. Are you hungry? All the mother said, come on in. Come on in. Come on in. Are you tired? She said, coming back from the other place. From the other place. From the other place. We're all coming back from the other place. From the other place. From the other place. I'm coming back from the other place. From the other place. From the other place. I'm coming back from the other place. From the other place. From the other place. I said, oh, children. Oh, mama. Look what I have found. Oh, I am bad with the good shit, mama.
Bad with the good shit.
I'm so bad with the good shit from going underground.
Woo! That song always makes me weep, and it's so wonderful for all of us now. It chokes me up too. Come on in. She says, we were born twice, the spark in our mother's belly, and then we were born into breathing. And also now, this is a time for incarnational sensuality. And part of the journey that begins this night and goes to the summer solstice, and some of you will be coming with us and some just telepathically, but it's about full-on incarnation. Like, we're really willing to be here. So I love the come on in. Come on in. It's so humming, you know, and incarnational sensuality. Absolutely. So do you want to say anything now about Beltane as we to and fro, Sean Patrick O'Donoghue?
Absolutely. So such an interesting time and such a perfect introduction to that time, because Beltane and Samhain are right across from each other on the wheel of the year. And in autumn at Samhain, the fruit and the seeds fell to the ground, and the trees sent their life and their awareness down into their roots, and all went down into the darkness to be a part of the dreaming of the earth. And we were, from Samhain until the eve of Beltane, in the dark of the year, in that dreaming. And now we come into the emergence. And one of the old, old ways of reckoning Beltane in Irish culture was the blooming of the first hawthorn blossom. And the hawthorn carries the scent of fertility and of death all at once, with its strangely animal scent mingled in with the chorus of floral molecules. And so it is that emergence from deep within into back into the life of this world. And at Samhain, we gave over our gifts to the ancestors. We gave over our gifts to the other world. At Samhain, Thori, the sacral king who is not monarch, but weaver together of the mind and the dream of the people, wed the land. And now at Beltane, we have the celebration of that wedding in this world, of all of our wedding to the life of the world. And we bring the summer in.
Yes. It is how we begin and how we will end our finale, to call in what we want. So just a little bit of introducing all the planets, and we'll bring in the plants as they choose to speak. So remember, everything real, everything symbolic. The planets represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. And as we mention them, they quicken in us, because we're also going, come on in, whatever we need. So the dance is particularly supportive. It's like everything is trying to help the humans. you know, all the creatures meet backstage and go, what are we going to do about the humans? We got to either heal them or kill them. Let's do both. All right. But we're here for the healing part, the healing part. So there are many beautiful gifts that are proffered to us, which is why it's so wonderful for all of us to be here as available. We are available as agents of synchronicity, as agents of, you know, symbiotic mutualism, a great phrase, symbiotic mutualism. And Pluto, death, rebirth is stationing. We'll get to where do we want collapse? Where shall we direct collapse? We'll bring that into play, like, woo, but it's very, but the two hosts of Pluto that has just entered Aquarius, it's all about community. Saturn, our capacity for dedication and defining things, our autonomy, and how we want to insource our own Saturn, insource our autonomy. You know, come on in, Saturn. And it quintiles Uranus, the other co-host of Aquarius. Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius. We'll be honoring all these in more detail. But the quintile is such a beautiful blessing to us. It's a 72-degree angle, what we get when we divide the circle by 5. 5 times 72 is 360. And it's irresistible eloquence being proffered to all of us on behalf of what we love. Come to that. And then my friend Sylvia, years, months, moons ago, said, Caroline, the quintile is that. It is irresistible eloquence, as you say. And what I also add to that is it's so democratic. It's the capacity for each of us to have a true perception and to be like a tuning fork in that it hums in others. So no need to conquer or persuade, just to hold steady. And then it would be as though people said, oh, since you, Roylan, Aaron, Richard, David, Melanie, guided my gaze, I see that now, right? So it's completely democratic and long-lasting influence, right? So Sylvia said, yes, the quintile is that, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. And I go, ooh, now we're talking. And if it's not true, we're going to make it true. And we have an abundance of quintiles to honor. But Saturn quintile Uranus is so beautiful. And it is about symbiotic mutualism. We are agents of synchronicity and the power of story. So we have just a little clip of Dr. Karen Gedney that I interviewed a long time ago, a year ago, on the Visionary Activist Show, a powerful story. You know, 30 years in prison. She was the prison doctor in Nevada. And she is such a great navigator of turning what we have called trauma and devastation into my dangerous, beautiful assignment. She was kidnapped and raped by a man in prison who was obsessed with her. And she emerged, you know, with a powerful dedication to improve the lives of all beings and improve people in prison. And then I just hosted her again on radio. This is what she's about to refer to, and our symbiotic mutualism and how we can feel it tingling in all of us. And I love her narration of everything is so calm and steady. Sylvia also said about the last radio show, it was as though we were touring the prison with her. But here is Dr. Karen Gedney on somebody else's podcast, but you'll understand why it's beautiful. Here we go.
Yes, it's a unique, event in that after I gave the radio show, I got your email, which was wonderful. And then I got an email from a lady who said, hey, my sister listened to Carolyn Casey's radio show in California. And she said I should contact you for a hypnotherapy session. And I just wanted you to know that the reason is I have incredible problems sleeping for my memorial of my husband. My husband was shot with his two family members in Georgia. And my husband and I have always been against the death penalty. And now I'm all torn up about not only the memorial service, the death of my husband, that I can't sleep. And my sister said, wow, you live in Genoa, which is next to Carson. Call up the lady. Maybe she can help you before you do the memorial thing, which is this week, you know, coming up. And so she contacted me, and yesterday she came over. I did hypnotherapy on her, and actually she contacted me this morning and said that she had slept that night, which was great. I mean, great. But uniquely, since I'm a prison doctor, since she knew I was against the death penalty, it was all these unusual sequence of events. And that really came out of Carolyn's radio, where a sister hears it and then calls her sister, and then she's, you know, in my house. So
that's so wonderful, because here we all are, you know, and what the choreography says, as we all dedicate and form this question, you know, what are we most dedicated to? That inner dedication, that inner Saturn, our deepest dream, the inner dedication hums our outer signal. So we're more likely to be danced into place with that with which we're in accord. So that's just a wonderful synchronous story of mutual aid. How do we help each other? And how everyone here, as we dedicate, then we're more likely to be danced into place in a synchronous way where we can, you know, contribute goodness. So that's a wonderful story. Let's introduce Saturn and Uranus even more. So Saturn is in Pisces now. It's like that happens last time, 1994, every 29-ish years. It's Saturn dedication, Pisces, the deepest dream. But it's also like, computer, don't do that. Wait, excuse me, never mind that. It's got a mind. I was just about to say, everything has a mind of its own. There we go. And that includes you. No, close that box over there. Okay. So time has a mind of its own. You might notice that here we are, a rapid metaphoric response team, because we only told people about this, you know, a minute ago. We're just testing how good are people, you know, at dancing into place. That's so wonderful. So, you know, Uranus is it's quintile to Saturn is such a fabulous gift. It says to us, our dedication, Saturn, is our freedom. You know, and Saturn and Uranus, their conversation within us and within the world. Saturn is the part of us that defines things, dedicates, takes vows. But Saturn is the part of us that is not good at, well, how are we going to do that? Saturn's job is what, not how. And Uranus chimes in and says, I'll do how. You all tell us, the big all, what. We'll do the booking. Do common sense things, because that's deep magic too, but not to let the compelling illusion of realism be an imaginative impediment. And I was saying to Sean that the Sabian symbol for Uranus is so heartening. It was stationing at 18 plus Taurus all the whole summer of 2022, and then it goes forward, then comes back, and it's there again. And its images, a whole fresh new continent arising up out of the sea. And it's like, right, that's what we want. That's what we're dedicated to. And you, Sean, said that's a Margan spell.
It is. So Beltane is also a time of worlds ending and worlds beginning. Mm. So in the old Irish stories, we are told that it was at Beltane that the Tuatha Dé, people who had left Ireland and gone to the far north of the world to learn the great mysteries, returned sailing on the black north wind. And when they landed, the hawthorn bloomed at Uisnech, at the center of the island. And that was the beginning of a time of a culture that knew how to call the storm, knew how to sing the ebb and flow of the tides, knew how to move with the turning of the stars in the sky, knew the language of the wind in the trees. That lasted a long time, until sailing north from Galicia in Spain, the sons of Mile came seeking a new home. And the Tuatha Dé called up the storm against them. But their bard Amargin stood at the prow of the ship, and he sang to the land, and he told the spirit of the land that he had been a stag of 7 battles. He had been a wind on the sea, that he had been a hawk above the cliffs of Achill, that he had been a salmon in a pool. And by revealing that he knew his kinship with all things, he revealed that he knew the language in which all things were wrought. And so the wind and the waves would no longer be against him. And he and his people sailed onto the land. And sailing onto the land, Amargin went and stood atop the hill at Uisnech. And he spoke again who he was. And the hawthorn blossomed. And as the hawthorn blossomed, he sang into being another world. He sang of the mountainsides covered with fruit trees. He sang of the stream of birds in the air. He sang of the fish-rich sea. And so that other world, that new world arose. And the world that was sank down and became the other world, into which Mananon, the son of the great sea of being, guided the Tuatha Dé to become the Dainichi, the fairy people, the other crowd. And into that world, and it was that ability to be in kinship with everything and understand the rhythm in which everything is sung that gave Amargin that capacity to call a world into being. In Irish, to say it is fated is to say Tashe Anon. It is in a poem, to which I respond, Mora Wilshe Anon, Scrive Don Nua. If it's not in the poem, write a new poem. And that was what Amargin did. Of course, the promises he made by speaking his kinship were not kept fully by his descendants. And so here we are in another time of needing to sing a close to one way of being and an opening to another way of being. And here where I am in Western Maine yesterday, the rivers rose up. It's been a drought here for many years, but yesterday we had the great flooding right as Beltane arrived. And then at noon, the rain stopped after 2 feet of water had stretched across the road. And the sun came out, and we don't have hawthorn on this land, but the very first apple blossom bloomed. And so worlds are always beginning and ending. And we can't change everything that's in the poem. We can't change its meter. We can't change its flow. We can't change the nature of the logic of its flow. But by reimagining our relation, we can change its metaphors, we can change its language, and changing that, we can change everything.
That's just very beautiful and resonant in 10,000 ways. And feel free, everyone, to not be self-conscious, to undulate along. Nobody's watching. I'll undulate. It's not a performance. It's just magic, because the undulating of the sky rivers, right, due to human bad manners and forgetting kinship. We want to come back to that. You know, the sky rivers are stalling, hence great deluges, and the Sargasso Sea has lost its centrifugal current, which is why it's just deposited 5,000 miles sargassum seaweed right now on Key West, actually, is where it's going, making people think that Florida is suffering a biblical punishment due to to Satan. But so undulating, it's part of the linguistic craft, you know, that we're all, especially Sean, you know, dedicated to, the power of language. So it's part of my ongoing, you know, to question everything and throw it into Pluto's cauldron that is habitual. There's no prison for the unexpected. So unexpected language, unexpected metaphor, you know, and so, you know, there is a a pandemic of the habitual use of the word impact, right? Richard knows this. I'm always railing with this thing, which is, I go, really, you want a sudden violent encounter? Is that what you have in mind? Right? As opposed to a long, curvy influence. And the word influence comes from astrology flowing in, as does our word desire, desidere. It's the desire for the stars that comes back into desire. And we go, right. So feel free again to, you know, as I am, you know, just to waft about as moved. But when you said, yes, forgetting and remembering. So Saturn, our Saturn, our authority, it's the part of us we all most tend to outsource because it's authority to incompetent sociopaths or, you know, leaders or, you know, whatever, or anything that causes us to cringe, any fear. And I've been working with this in myself and others in many different talks and venues because it's an ongoing practice just to notice during the day, you know, where do we go? It's like insourcing Saturn, calling it back in, remembering our autonomy. We want, you know, the round table of shining, radiant, equal individuals. And part of the play is for all of us who insource our authority, we're sucking the chi out of external authoritarianism, going, fuck, right? So inward and outward connected. And Saturn is in Pisces. Remember our dream. Remember what we came here to do. You know, and the forgetting and remembering mythology is so crucial, and even more now, remembering, as Sean was saying, remembering kinship. And I love the, it's very pertinent, all these different little pieces of our story and narrative that we carry with us. So in the Mary Poppins books, not the horrible movie that P.L. Travers hated, it made her fortune, but she hated it because the books are really wild. And in the books, Mary Poppins is a shaman, and she's entrusted with the twin babies. And this is very in our chart here. And they know the language of the wind and the birds and all creatures. And she says to them, you know, you're going to forget. And they're like, no. And there's a very powerful moment where they forget. But there are ways back. And all the mythologies have this about the forgetting and remembering. So we are here gathered now to remember, you know, the language of the wind and the birds and participatory animism. This Beltane, Taurus festival of sensuality and incarnation and come on in, and it's good to be here, and it's not easy getting here, you know, so everyone here deserves some respect, you know. And you know, in that, you know, the symbol for Taurus, right, it's the circle with the horns, and we think of it as the bull, but it's not. It's the womb and the fallopian tubes coming into it, made clear on cave paintings. So it's Taurus says, why does creation create? Why do we create? You know, why are we born? You know, and Taurus says, for pleasure and incarnational sensuality and participatory animism and symbiotic mutualism. And we go, right. And there's beautiful patterns around. So forgetting and remembering, Saturn as a challenging angle to Mars. I'll bring up the chart in the fullness of time, Mars and Cancer overhead to remember positive Mars. And Mars and Cancer is very Brer Rabbit, right? All these important stories, right? Right, because I think it's also, you were mentioning, Sean, that the story writers, I've just gone on strike last night at midnight, right? So we go,
yes,
we have stories. We have stories, you know, anyway. So Brer Rabbit is a story. There was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were kin. And part of the power of Beltane always, but what is unique to this one? And we go, Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius, is in Taurus for a few more years. This is an opportunity, a crucial one for all of us, to form treaties, alliances, partnerships with what we love in nature. To dedicate to that in nature that we love, to be a cultural agent for it. These times of vows are super, powerful. So, the realm of kinship and what you were saying, worlds ending, worlds beginning, worlds rising up. And it's experimental, but for each person, we want to set in motion things now to tease and play with and make one's own and translate, now all the way to summer solstice and forever, but for this moment. And that's part of the beauty of the chart, which I can bring up unless you want to chime in now at this point, Sean.
Let's let the planets speak first, and then I'll join the chorus.
Okay, that's good. All right, so I'm going to just bring in the dance of now, and we remember this is the chart of now. This is me. This is East Coast, Washington, D.C. Many of us know how astrological charts work. This is just factual. This is the only thing different. This is the East. This is the horizon. This is the East. This is the West. So just to introduce the beauty, we have the moon in Libra rising. That's cultural Venus. She's making a wonderfully quirky angle to these planets in Taurus. That's the sensual nature Venus. So it says for all of us to dedicate, Saturn, to dedicate to being cultural agents on behalf of what we love, but really forming treaties and alliances. It's the whole realm of biomimicry. It's the sine qua non for life on this planet. Many of you know Janine Benyus, wonderful woman, founder of biomimicry. Rather than looting nature, let's borrow her recipes. And we want to tease that into the economy, into our political body, into everything. What would nature do? She and E.O. Wilson gave a wonderful website to the world called asknature.org, and it's slightly reorganized now, but it used to, and it's still the idea. It opens up with a question box, and you type in any design question, and it tells you how nature solves it. And this completely transcends strife and turmoil and politics because it is so beautiful. People go, oh, that is so beautiful. That solution is so elegant. So Moon in Libra, and then just let me delineate a little bit. She's part of what's called a yod, a finger of destiny, 150-degree angle over here to Mercury and Vesta retrograde. Mercury's retrograde, not a terrible thing, happens many times, but now everything is of import. Our mind, our voice, our communicative skills. I like thinking of retrograde planets appearing to go backwards in the sky to us on Earth as on a vision quest to remember kinship, remember our capacity. It's like no sense being half mad. Time to talk to everything. Talk to the cup, talk to the thing. Sometimes, we cry out, like, hello, and there's nothing coming back. And we go, oh, maybe we are pathetic weenies in a vast, uncaring universe. But sometimes, here we go, there's a call and response. It's like, hello, and it's like, hello. It's like, right. Right. So Yorna says to each of us, all I want from each being here to seal the deal, I will connect you to the coolest thing possible, all the logistics in order to dree your weird, to play your role in destiny. And all I want to seal the deal is just a gesture of willingness and availability, and just in one's heart, we go, we are willing and we are available. And Yorna says, you're on, here we go. And so for all of us to rummage and reflect and reconnect with what we love and what we are stewarding, and to remember, again, design and artistry and creativity. And it reminds us that we only really have the power of a intuitive insight once we've given it outward creative expression. Giving outward creative expression to an inner experience grants us the power of that insight, just things to play with. So a yod is a 150-degree angle here from Libra to Taurus, and a 150-degree angle down here to Saturn and Pisces, and a 60-degree angle between them. It's called the Finger of Destiny. And it's a quality that if we don't work it, it's just kind of quirky. But if we work it, it's a sword and a stone. You know, and again, it's the cultural thing connected to our deepest dedication, our deepest dreams. And we are willing to remember what we've forgotten, remembering ingenuity, remembering, you know, our deepest dedication. What did we come here to get? What did we come here to do? And I love, you know, anybody here born in the 60s, you know, 1964 to 68, around, but the 60s were the Uranus-Pluto conjunction at mid to late Virgo. Uranus is now trining that. So anybody who was born in the 60s, anybody who was culturally influenced by the 60s, anybody who's got a resonant, it's a sleeper cell that's coming alive, going, didn't we come here to do stuff? And it's like, we did. So that's quickening. And then just a little more, of who's here, what parts of us are here. So straight down is Pluto stationing at 0 degrees of Aquarius. It stationed yesterday. And Pluto says, where would you like collapse, death, rebirth, going down? You know, and I think I'll exit the chart for the moment while we talk about where would we like collapse, right? Because we were talking about this, Sean. You know, and so there's the debt ceiling, right? And Uranus and Taurus says, make everything an animal ally. You know, who's a good collapse? Yes, you are. Where shall we direct you? You know, do you have, you know, in regard to the debt ceiling and possible economic collapse of, you know, of the human world, do you have, who's a good collapse? Where would you like to direct collapse, Sean?
Yes. Well, I love this question, and it makes me actually want. I love this question, and it makes me want to call in a mentor now among the ancestors, Philip Darrigan, who would be 100 if he were alive on May 5th. And this is actually also the 100th anniversary of the Catholic Worker Movement, so we get a double dose of that kind of loving, prophetic aspect of the world that I walked away from, being a twice ex-Catholic. But I think about, when I think about Phil, and I think about his brother Dan, and about the other six of the Plowshares Eight in 1980, there were people in high places talking about Armageddon and talking about inviting apocalypse. And they were holding up the book of Revelation as what we needed to be moving toward. And what the Plowshares 8 said was, no, 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 that's not the future. That's where we've already been. That's an allegory about the Roman Empire. We can look at Isaiah and look at Micah and choose a different end to what we've been doing. We can say the people will stream to the mountain and they will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And then they went to the General Electric plant in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and made that literal by hammering on the nose cone of the MX missile. And there's actually an amazing film made during their trial, directly from the trial transcripts, where they all play themselves and Martin Sheen plays the judge, called In the King of Prussia, that really captures the essence of that moment. But to me, what's brilliant about the magic of that moment, and it's so interesting to me that, you know, as a witch, I learned so much about ritual magic from a Catholic priest. what's brilliant to me about that moment is saying, okay, yes, we're at the end of something. You're choosing this one vision from the mythic realm. And we're saying, no, there's another direction we can choose. There's another place that continues in the rhythm of the poem, but takes it to a different conclusion, a different direction. And so as I look at this idea of the economic debt ceiling, on the one hand, you know, it's kind of a strange made-up human thing. We print money, we create credit, and then we decide that there's a limit on how much there can be. And actually, in the news this afternoon, there was talk that I really loved to see of the Biden administration talking about, well, does debt ceiling even exist? Is it even allowed under the Constitution? And shifting that question, I think, is a wonderful thing. But I think we actually need to shift the question further, because we can look at the fires and we can look at the floods and the droughts and the famines as the notices arriving that we have passed our ecological debt ceiling, that our way of living cannot be continued. There is no more credit available. We have burned the remains of the ancient creatures, and in doing that, create a precarious situation. And there's the debt ceiling that really can't be negotiated. So what if we shift the conversation to, as humans, how do we acknowledge the debt that we've entered into to all of us and to many of each other, and redefine the way we're going to live? How do we change our budget of the heart, our budget of priorities, our budget of the spirit in such a way that we actually can change the true imbalance we've entered into and not worry so much about this silly one we made up?
Yes. that is one true story. Absolutely. That is the primary true story. That's really good. And then again, remember, part of the generosity of now is, if we don't know what to do, invite in what does. The trickster resolution, like, whoa. Economic ecological debt ceiling, the Saturn boundaries that we've crossed. You know, we are in a festival of positive setting of boundaries. And at the Bioneers Conference, where I was in Berkeley beginning of last month, everything's being dissolved and reinvented, and the new forms are not quite in place. So it's like, okay, how shall we gather? But Kim Stanley Robinson and Leah Stokes were my kind of most nutrient-rich, you know, conversational presenters. And many of you may have read Kim Stanley Robinson's novel, The Ministry for the Future, which is very grim and very realistic about what's coming down. But he said, he's feeling more optimistic now, and I'm like, good. I'm not going to finish reading that book. It's very great. It's useful. It's grim, you know. But there was no magic to the thing. No, my great friend Jerome, who loves it, I go, is there any magic? Is there any indigenous wisdom? Is there any feminine? No. I'm like, I can't finish it. All right, but now I don't have to. But there is that. And so he'd said. But he did put on the table that he's more optimistic, but there are Saturn boundaries to be crossed that you've referenced, that we're close to tipping. And many people on this call know the details of that. And we go, whoo. And then Jorna says, dedication. It's a dangerous, dangerous time politically, environmentally, every which way. It's a crisis of leadership. You know, and if we don't know what to do, invite in what does. But also, the power of definition, like, what do we need now? And I think also in the Pluto cauldron, you know, we know that the Dementors or the reality police feeds on strife, opposition, conflict, right? So it's a very sneaky thing out there, all these many, many tripwires, right? You can mention, you know, like vaccines or Ukraine, whatever. And it's like, we want to cool this out, these worthy conundrums, you know, and then call in the realm of necessary miracles. But Kim Stanley Robinson, you know, said it is a dangerous time. We know this. And danger is an incentive to experiment. Yes. And to embrace, you know, allies who are doing Saturn dedicated work, and to compost, you know, so much of the progressive left. So with him was Leah Stokes, a young woman who's been working with the Biden administration on Build Back Better. And her narrative was, she said in June, all these reporters were calling to say, we want to do a story about how environmental legislation and Build Back Better is dead. And she's like, it's not dead. It's not dead. And she said she only cried when Chuck Schumer said it's dead. But she had many hardworking teammates who were working and kind of negotiating. And one of them sent her a little celebratory emoji. And she's like, what? What? And they said, Joe Manchin changed his mind. Some things had to be given up. We'll work on getting them back. But really, all we had to do was change the name from Build Back Better to the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, and we're in with some powerful legislation. People brought up the challenging things, the Willow Project of, you know, drilling. And it's like, right, not to get Nyenya, but we can dissolve it. We can work. We can all those things. But Kim Stanley Robinson, a great realistic person, said, I think we should all overcome Nyenya just to honor how many smart young women that Biden has placed in charge of climate legislation. We go, right. And then just as a little footnote, Leah Stokes said, you know, she had given birth to premature twins and was doing many things at the time. And she said there was lots of hate mail and things, of course. She said the most painful was from the progressive left going, you betrayed us. You did. And it's like, God. And I go, right, it's an interesting issue, the Nyenya. It's like Allison Laurie says, the reason academic politics is so vicious is because the stakes are so small. It's like, oh, get them, right? And so for our own team of progressive politics to into the cauldron dissolve Nyenya and ladle out the desirable vision and to keep dedicating and kind of working on the thing. But that's not nothing. And what I've seen with so many people, think of the Justins and Gloria in Tennessee, right? This is so Saturn Uranus. These are deeply dedicated people, you know, who were ready for their moment, and more than a moment, they're ready for their history, you know. And many of you know the Justins in Tennessee, these and Gloria, right? In Tennessee, there was another mass shooting. And then just a little setup before then, I was watching, you know, there was a Fox News clip and on a reporter and a woman about the mass shooting and the death of children. And a woman behind the Fox News guy was like, aren't you tired of reporting this same story? And she was so Saturn Pisces. She was so that the Fox News camera went right to her. And the Fox News guy stepped out of the way. And that was a woman synchronicity had placed there. She had been a survivor of a shooting in Wisconsin in July. She was visiting her sister-in-law when this happened. And she had her 5 minutes down. She was ready. And I just want to underline this for all of us. You know, we aspire to be ready for these moments. A moment. And she, you know, had her deal. She goes, you know, death by guns is the number one killer of children in this country. It's more than cars. And she went on like that. And then she skillfully, you know, kind of spoke to the Fox audience and said, the violence on the border is largely due to our lax gun laws in which, you know, gangs dealing, you know, poison, you know, are allowed to do so because of our lax, you know, gun law. Anyway, she was ready for her moment. And then all of this resonating. And then at that point, young people were, you know, in the Capitol insisting on gun legislation, ban books, ban drag children in body bags, right? And these three legislators in the State House, the two Justins and Gloria, you know, stood up and gave them the microphone and whatever. And were the two Justins were booted out, you know, but then came back. And these were, you probably all followed it, but they were so ready, so well-spoken, so uncringing, so self-possessed of Saturn and what needed to be said, Saturn in dedication to community well-being. It's like, whoa. And I just thought, you know, just for all of us to go ready for the moment. You know, we see this over and over again. If we are Saturn dedicated, the moment opens. And that's what we can kind of plant now in our dedication for when the path opens. So, yeah, so there's the debt ceiling, and as you said, the economic, ecological debt ceiling. But also, you know, if there's going to be, it's kind of on schedule. I mean, the debt ceiling crisis, you know, in which the blackmail really of the Republicans saying, well, we'll raise the debt ceiling if you, you know, limit food stamps and do this and limit climate and limit whatever. And, you know, again, Biden's going, no, that's blackmail. No, we won't do that. The most radical thing you can say with progressives is, let's support Biden, not in energetically. It's like my friend Pat, you know, is saying, you know, Reiki healing, you know what, something just to add to all of our wizardry, all of our skills participating. When Leah Stokes gave her narration about how, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act got through, it was a small miracle. But she gave the dates, and again, without hubris, without claiming credit, without anything, you know, it was all around July 13th. And I talked to Pat Ewing, with whom we did Election Magic Council, and wonderful, you know, dedicated human. And I go, Pat, remember when I called you on July 11th and said, let's put a pewter shield around Biden just to deflect the kind of nya-nya, old age jokes, sucking chi, whatever, to give his soul some collected realm to do what good is possible. And she's like, right, and let's see a little sparkly on the 20 acres of the White House just so something good can come from it. And she said she'd get her little witch daughters on it too. And I just, for some reason, I picked pewter, and I just want us to play with these things, Saturn boundaries that give freedom so that people can dree their weird and cultivate and give their gift on behalf of the goodness to the community. So then Pat called up 2 days later, right, and goes, Joe Manchin changed his mind. Biden recovered from COVID. Let's keep this up. And then from the whole other realm of just hardworking government dedication, it's like, oh, it was just that little bit of magic without presume, without hubris, but that's why we're here to play with that as well. And it reminded me, because, you know, we're all drawn to learn more history about Eastern Europe and World War II, and it's all humming and resonant. Everything's humming and resonant. History is the womb of time. And, you know, when the Nazis invaded France and Paris, everyone, including the British, thought that the Nazi invasion of Britain would succeed, right? And then I go, oh, but there was Dionne Fortune with her little gang team of ritualists engaged by the British government to weave ritual spells to protect Britain from the Nazi invasion. And I go, that little extra thing. And I'm just putting out to, you know, in a quintile fashion to all of us to use all of our skills, you know, the wizardry, the imagination, the synchronicity, the partnering with what we love, the inviting in of what's needed as the crucial sine qua non to add to the hardworking dedication of others who really are of good hearts. So there. I hand it back to you.
So many things arising and spiraling, but
oh, good.
You know, yes, I'm beginning with thinking about, you know, and you know, I'm definitely one who has had a lot of my own grumbliness with Biden going back a very long time, because my first time out of the country was being in Colombia, seeing where the policies that he had written were sending the planes in to spray the herbicides on the rainforest. And yet, when I think about him, I can see that there was a seed of compassion, that having seen addiction in his own family, he had such compassion for anyone dealing in a certain way. As he had a certain kind of compassion for everyone dealing with addiction. And then that turned into an angriness that would allow destruction against people and other beings whose lives he couldn't imagine. I think about Gary Snyder's words that all failures of charity and compassion are failures of imagination. And I think about how Tip O'Neill described his conversations with Ronald Reagan, about how when he would tell Ronald Reagan a story of someone who's being impacted by the policies, Reagan would become incredibly caring and try to figure out, oh, well, how do we get food to this person? Or how do we get this person a home? Or, oh, no, this poor person. But not be able to make the connection about the policies. Now, I think that Biden has a much greater moral imagination than Ronald Reagan does. But I still think in the places where I see him falling short, it's because he cannot imagine the lives of women in Yemen or Saudi Arabia or the lives of caribou in Alaska in the same way that he can imagine the lives of people who are like the people he has met. And so my wish is to expand his moral imagination. And it's so interesting that he has that, we can see that capacity in his understanding of poetry. And I think about that beautiful Seamus Heaney poem about the curate Troy that Biden so often cites, and particularly that line in the poem that speaks of once in a generation. There is a moment when hope and history rhyme. And to me, that's where the dedication of this connection between dedication and freedom comes. And I think about all of the improbable stories of the things that nobody thought could really change anything, but that were pursued with great dedication. And of course, you know, we all know the story of Rosa Parks sitting on the bus. And some of us also realize that she trained for that prepared for that and organized for that. But beyond that, she was not the only person who trained and organized and prepared for that. There were other people who resisted that law in the same way at other moments. And it just wasn't the moment. And then in that one moment, that same choice carried out by a different person for a particular time and place began to create change. I think about the story of when, I can't remember his name, but the commander, former commander of the Strategic Air Command, came out for nuclear abolition. And everybody was surprised and asked him, how did you count this? And he said, well, there was one woman who was standing outside the base every day holding a banner about ending nuclear terror. And every day he drove past her, and every day he saw that sign. And when finally he felt the freedom to speak, her dedication was what inspired him to. And even the very small moments, like I think about back when I was a very lonely peace activist in the Clinton years, speaking out about the bombing of Iraq. And I was outside a Phil Lesh concert in Boston, trying to find a way to score a free ticket and decide as long as I was there, I might as well pass out some flyers. And there was a man who came up to me and took a flyer from me about the human consequences of war and read it. He walked away, and then he walked back to me, and he said, I'm in the National Guard. I'm about to be deployed. I don't know what to do. And I told him about the GI Rights Hotline. And then, you know, he went off, and I had conversations with other people and almost forgot about it. And then a year later, at a festival, he spotted me across the field and came running and said that he had gone home that day and called the GI Rights Hotline, and that he had decided that he could not be part of what he had wrongly dedicated to, and that he needed to rededicate himself. And, you know, this that small act of that flyer in that moment, that dedication against all odds, because the thing about that moment in every generation when hope and history rhyme is it's very hard to know exactly when that moment will fall or exactly which words of hope and history will rhyme. And so we need to continually show up and continually bring our dedication. And then just spiraling a bit more with dedication and freedom, I think about two important roots of those concepts and their relationship to me. And one of those is in the Brehon Law of old Irish culture, which was that there were two ways one could be free. And the first way was to be seer. And to be seer was to know your ancestors and be able to recite your genealogy that went back to the ancestor who had wed the spirit of the land. And that way, speak to the land your family's history of dedication, and your freedom arose from that. But the other way was to become nemid, which was to come into relation. And two ways that that would happen would be a blacksmith was nemid, because a blacksmith was in relation with the stones themselves. And a druid was nemid, because a druid was in relation with the forest itself and with all of life and with the gods and with the ancestors. And, you know, I spent a long time working with my genealogy, trying to figure out how the next generation from me could become seer. And I realized that because the baptism records were outlawed for 100 years in the west of Ireland, and because the last family papers burned in a house fire in 1978, there is no way to become seer in the old way. But I can become nemid by entering into a relationship with life itself. And then the new tracing of that relationship with the life of the land can begin with me. And so my dedication can open a way to freedom and old understanding. And the last bit I want to spiral in is about our history of democracy. And, you know, as someone who spent a lot of time on the left, I have heard all of the theories of why our democracy was flawed from the start and was doomed to failure from the start because of the involvement of capitalism and the exclusion of people. And it's not that any of those are untrue. But we can go back further to where did the idea come from? And I'm forgetting the name of the second David, but David Graeber and the other David, the anthropologist and the archaeologist who wrote The Beginning of Everything, talked about how the ideas of democracy that we have really emerged from European conversations with Native people in North America. And the Native people in North America were shocked by a number of things they were hearing about the Europeans. And one of them was the lack of democracy. But there were other parts of that that were inherent to the indigenous idea of democracy, which were, why aren't women invited into your decisions? Why are some people hungry? How can a hungry person be part of decisions? Why aren't the animals and the plants and the stones and the water part of your decisions? And so just like rather than rejecting Biden, we can expand his circle of compassion. Rather than rejecting the flawed origin of this republic, we can say, oh, who did they forget to invite? How did they forget to set the table? Not everyone was supposed to be invited and come into new relations.
Yes. I know that what the last things you said were really important because it was hard to hear. Like the static gods were there. Can you re-say just the last little bit?
Or is there something in vaguely the same tune that instead of looking at how flawed the origin of this republic was, we can say. Well, we can look at how flawed it was, but instead of rejecting it because the origin was flawed, we can say, oh,
well,
how did you forget to arrange the table and who did you forget to invite?
Right, right. Why are there no women and why? And the slavery is a problem, said the native people, and the Council of Grandmothers is essential. Right, and just to go back to the choreography, which again, only useful in that it resonates in all of us. We're not outsourcing our authority to anything, really. But Pluto stationing now, zero Aquarius, going, all right, it's got to be, you know, community, and there's the toxic shadow. And then it's going to retrograde back to 27 plus Capricorn, which is where Pluto was when this country was founded. Ongoing Pluto return and of this country that says, okay, you can start a democracy because we haven't tried that yet, right? It's a republic, but only if you look at everything, only if you look at everything. And that's part of the dynamic, you know, for everybody, you know, but for this country and its history. And that's why I love you bringing Philip Berrigan and inviting him in, right? We get to invite in, and his birthday is on May 5th, which is the lunar eclipse and the Buddha's full moon, the Wesak celebration celebrated all over the world. And it's in myth. It's when the Buddha was born and when he attains enlightenment with his back against the Bodhi tree, because nobody gets enlightened without trees, right? We'll be doing a whole lot of that. And also to partner befoibled humans with plants and animals festooned around them. I think it's time for, you know, our mad whimsy, our mad poetic whimsy to introduce. So, you know, magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, going, all right, there we go. And I love Jupiter now for all of us at 26 plus Aries. And its images through imagination, lost opportunities are regained. So more miracles, you know, on so many levels. And I loved you bringing in Isaiah. Right, the swords into plowshares. And then also Isaiah says, speak to the weary, a word that will rouse them. Right. And right now, Jupiter squares Pluto. So even as the writers, the storytellers are going on strike as of midnight, you know, we go, there's lots of stories. And I remembered my ally, Jim Lewis, astrologer, said, look at Jupiter, Pluto, incredible for publicity, for directing collective attention, just for all of us to cleanse and customize and put this in our magic backpack for this season into the summer that we will be calling forth. And I found that, you know, publicity, a quirky secular word, but Jupiter is storytelling, Pluto is death and rebirth, its primary totem is the phoenix. And so for all of us, also, we're in a micro and macro way, what gets us through? What has gotten us through arduous, you know, underworld experiences? You know, Dr. Karen Gedney, you know, her ordeal in prison arising, you know, with as a major influence in prison reform and education and anti-death penalty and also, you know, and aging in a fantastic kick-butt way. So many great things. But so Jupiter's storytelling, Pluto is the phoenix. And before the phoenix bursts into flames and is reborn, she sings this hauntingly beautiful song. And all of creation stops and listens to the phoenix's song and is reminded, Mercury retrograde, of what's really important, you know, beauty and kindness and reciprocal act and dedication. And that's really what we call forth in ourselves and in everyone. And I just wanted to bring in, you know, things that we've played with before. Mars in Cancer, trines Neptune, fairy tales, you know, positive heroic. We're in fairy tale world now. It's why it's so fluctuating. Fairy tale rules are in play. But Mars in Cancer, just a little aside in that, for all of us to be willing to cleanse our traditions. Oh, here comes Isabella Catwitch. Okay, it's good. Right when we needed you. There we go. There we go. Excuse me. So in astrology, everything wants to be cleansed and thrown into the cauldron. In astrology, the old fogey part says, oh, Mars in the sign of Cancer is in its fall. And we go, well, wait a minute. I like the exaltations, but why should Mars woofiness and testosterone that we're going to come to, you know, be in its fall in the realm of the moon of protecting life and husbandry and kindness? I think that's colonial nonsense myself, right? So to be, you know, well, we're all heretics here, right? Because heretic was a term of praise that meant cross-pollinating contributor to culture so that knowledge never becomes dogma. May we all be heretics by the power of trickster Uranus. But it's also this power of storytelling to spiral forth. The phoenix sings her song. All of creation listens to it and is reminded of symbiosis and mutual aid and what's really, really important. So that's also, you know, and through imagination, lost opportunities are regained. So we love that. What I've been wedding the Mars in Cancer to, and I took wonderful things that you've been teaching, Sean, but it's like poet Robert Bly said, the loneliest person in the world was the man after industrialism who must leave the land, right? We're revisiting these forks in the road, like how did we get into this mess? That's one of them. 1938 Nazi Germany is another, history. And he says, the man must leave the land and the husbandry. That word is wonderful. The soup and the chickens and the babies and the thing and go to an office or a factory. Right. So now we're getting to the economic critique and the everything of intrinsically, you know, where it all started. I do want fresh language just to come up with things, too, because I think, let's see, maybe communism into communitarian. Just playing with it, because there's prisons for anything that's been commonplace, and just fresh language is a wish. And we are here, Beltane, which is the beginning of courtship on the way to the wedding, which is the summer solstice. And Mars in Cancer in a shadowy way is thought of also as kind of, you know, holding you know, angers long. And that's where, you know, Pat Ewing ways back said, what is the antonym of grievance? I'm like, oh, that's a really good question, because authoritarianism really runs on grievance. And we want to define things. Saturn says, let's define everything. It's a really useful thing. Define what would good governance be. Define things, you know. And it's a great way to spiral out of conflict by asking each other, well, what's your definition of wise leadership? And what's your... So grievance, and that's the thing that I always use, you know, from the Terry Pratchett novel, The Cunning Man. The cunning man has come to town and created mob mind, which draws out the worst of people, the violent retribution, the I've got mine thing, the rough music that causes people to pick up a stick and do cruel, horrible things. And in that novel, it's very clear that the cunning man finds purchase in all whose hearts are full of grievance and resentment and revenge. And I go, oh, right. And I go, grievance is outsourced authority. And so for me, I've been working on this, working this kind of material, because I think it's important for all of us to kind of work on it. And I go, right, the fate of the world requires humans dissolving grievance from their hearts. And we were talking about this, Sean, too, which is like, keep satire, keep grudges, maybe, you know, keep the art of insult, right? But grievance, you know, and how we all choose to define that, I think it might be anything that is an impediment to wishing well, to blessing. Mm. Do you have a sense of how grievance, to discern the grievance we want to dissolve in our hearts and the body politic heart as well?
Absolutely. And I also do want to spiral back to Robert Bly in a moment. But
okay, good. Thank you.
So, yeah, when I think about resentment, you know, my friend and editor, Reid Wildermuth, who's an American expat in Luxembourg, talks about the fact that our word resentment comes from the French word ressentiment. So it's feeling again. But when I think about that, the feeling again is the feeling out of context. And like, I think about, you know, so much has happened since then, but there was that, like 10 years ago or so, there was that occupation of the Mahler National Wildlife Refuge by the militia guys. And it was really interesting because, you know, of course, my first reaction was, listen to these horrible men thinking they have the right to all of this. But then I started thinking, and I started listening to what the contours of their stories actually were, and paying attention to their last names. And they had Scottish and English last names. Hmm. And they were talking about the land that their family had farmed, the land where their family had grazed their cattle and their sheep, was taken from them without compensation, and that destroyed their way of life. And on the one level, there was the ridiculous aspect of it, because most of these were millionaire ranchers, and they were actually grazing on public land. But I realized, oh, this is a displaced retelling of what happened to their ancestors during the clearances and during the enclosures. And because nobody ever told those stories, and those stories were lost, that gets displaced and becomes this, and a story that has the same shape can go into the hole that was left by that unnamed pain. And so there's so much that can be, we can move beyond resentment by finding its origins and rerouting and allowing the actual loss to be felt. And so that feels like an opportunity for transformation to me. And then I think about, absolutely. One of the losses of men and the masculine in this culture has been the loss of that nurturing role and displacement from a place that somewhere in our bodies, somewhere in our history, is remembered. And it's really interesting, too, that I feel like it's so important right now to allow for multiplicity. That, you know, I've had a long journey around making peace with being a man in this culture where there's not a lot about that that I necessarily want to identify with. And I talked with gods and with ancestor spirits about that. And I talked about, well, here we're seeing this wonderful move outside the binary that's constricted so many people. How can I talk about reclaiming my binary identity in that context? And what the spirits told me was, we said there are more than two. We didn't say that the two don't exist. And that actually a coming into the trueness for those who are part of the two, who are part of the masculine and the feminine, is just as important as all of the other infinite possibilities that emerge being given room. And so I thought, well, okay, so I'm going to rededicate myself to this. But if I can't find the reference points in this culture right now, I'm going to look to my ancestors, and I'm going to look to the wild world. And I went, my first trip to Ireland was with the question of the Mars and Cancer question of what does the healthy, nurturing masculine look like? And, you know, I think as you speak of that loneliness that Robert Bly spoke of, I also think about my very favorite thing that he ever wrote was his poem to my son Noah, 10 years old, that I always tear up when I speak these words, where he said, "I am proud only of those days that pass in undivided tenderness."
Hmm.
And of course, Wendell Berry has spoken of this as well, of the nurturing masculine emerged in the family that lived a life together on the land, and the removal of the father from that changed what fatherhood meant and changed what masculinity meant. And I understood something of the nature of that was part of the shape of the ache. But I had to go walk in the place where my ancestors had lived and pray for them to show me what had been before, what had been lost. And then pray to the other than humans of the land to show it to me. And in one of the strongest moments that it came forward, I was with an oak that was over 1,000 years old. And it was wide enough. The trunk was wide enough that there was an indentation in the trunk that fit my shoulders perfectly. And I leaned back into it, and I felt the solidity of that support. And I felt this nurturing. And the first voice in my mind said, "This feels so maternal." And then the voice from the oak said, "Oh no. This is the nurturing masculine. This is what you asked me to show you." And of course, there are many possibilities of how different people can be nurturing in masculine ways and nurturing in feminine ways and nurturing in other ways. But I think we really need to invite that back. And part of what we need to invite back is solid, rooted tenderness. And speaking of stories, if we don't want to cross the picket line with American stories, there is the wonderful Irish film, The Quiet Girl, on Colin Cuan, that is now just now recently available for streaming in North America, which is a movie about tenderness.
Ah.
It's about a young girl who has a very rough and lonely life, whose family sends her off to be with relatives in the Waterford Gaeltacht, the Irish-speaking region of Waterford, on a farm. And this older man and older woman who had lost a child take her in, and the entire film is just showing the tenderness that they bring to this girl over the summer and how the tenderness nurtures her and changes her. And those are the stories we have forgotten how to tell because we've forgotten the ways that they happen, even though at the same time we witness and experience the ways that they happen when we allow them.
So I like throwing masculine, feminine into the cauldron for fun, because the astrological language speaks of Mars and Venus. You know, in Mars is wolfiness, Venus magnetizes, Mars animates, and together they spiral it into the world. So they're all qualities of intelligence in some unique dance dynamic in all of us. So for me, I'm I feel liberated by throwing masculine and feminine into the cauldron, and that Venus and Mars are so much more liberated kind of a deal. And then as we're beginning to gather to deconvene, but we want to have the plants speak and everything. And then I'll just bring up the chart briefly, and we'll bring in the plants that we want to surround people with, and the plants that encouraging tenderness is a fun thing, right? I mean, just to go, right? We're woofing wuzza wuzza, right? And Mars is woofiness and Cancer is wuzza wuzza. So encouraging, tenderness, wuzza wuzza, I think. And so we have Mars here, beautiful 120 degree angle to Neptune. Neptune is collective group dream mind. It's the whole mythological realm in which we are. And Neptune says to this part of us, let's see, collective group dream mind is welcoming all that you speak of, all that we speak of, the positive, the return of the green man, the return of strong enough to be gentle, the return of wise leadership, the return of dedication. And I was thinking about that, with the infinite, wonderful remedy to news, which is dog rescue videos and cat things. Many cat videos of Papa Cat being surrounded by kittens and grooming them and taking care of them. And I realized when Stella Coyote was born, her father was a captive coyote, but he took great care of those puppies. He came and regurgitated in front of them. And, and so much of we've separated the father out, when it's intrinsic, the father cat, the father coyote, the father whatever, and we go, come on back. And this beautiful gift to us, Neptune says, we just want you humans to wonder. I wonder, I wonder what I want, and wonder then attracts augury and revelation. And then we're back in the conversation. Like, I wonder how we resolve this. I wonder, fill in the blank, I wonder which way to go. I wonder, that way. So it's part of our stepping back into the dance as a crucial dynamic. And then just little bits just to say, okay, our dedication is our freedom, our dedication to being cultural agents on behalf of what we love. And the moon has changed degrees since we were talking. It was 8 plus Libra when we began, which is all about being richly cultured. Matthew Arnold said to be cultured is to be acquainted with the highest possibilities of the human spirit throughout time. And I I want to throw speciesism into the cauldron, going, not just the human spirit, the highest spirit of wolves and moss and tardigrades, right? But to be acquainted with that. And now, just as a heartening for all of us, the moon has changed degrees, and her image now is a canoe having passed through dangerous rapids finally reaches calm water. And it's like, okay, if we paddle together, we can do impossible things, right? And if we're willing to, see the goodness possible, well, it's a challenging thing. We're all kind of working on this, right? And we all have our interesting tripwires, because when you said, yes, hard time with Biden. Yes, we've all been on that road. I'm just rooting for his being able to dree his weird at the moment. But then it was great too, because you then go, but Reagan, I'm like, that's my tripwire. So we all have our tripwires, but opening portals of metaphoric influence. What do we want to invite in? And the conundrum. And I so love, the positive Mars, positive Venus, the woofiness of protectiveness. And it was you, Sean, who said so long ago when we're like, the Ukraine, it's a conundrum. I'll come right back to that thought. But it was interesting. Leah Stokes said, the war on the Ukraine, terrible in so many horrible and cruel ways. But the energy policy, the renewable energy policy of Europe has advanced 5 years. Like, everybody in Poland, has heat pumps. And we go, complexity, nuance, encourage the good, discourage the bad, all of that. But you had said, remember when the Russian women marched into Chechnya?
Yes. They walked into Chechnya to find their sons on the front lines and walk them home. And maybe I should stop apologizing for weeping, because I think we need to allow more of it. And, you know, the Irish word for crying is cuina, which refers to the keen, which is the mournful cry that opens the gate between worlds for the spirit to pass. And so, and it was the keening women going to the front lines to find their sons. And some of them were dead, and some of them were alive, and some of them were in between, but they brought them home. So, not just how do the individual mothers bring their individual sons home, but how do we call all the wayward back to true home? And I think about one of the teachings of an herb that I love, motherwort, is that mother is a verb. That yes, mother is also a noun, but mother is primarily a verb. It's a verb about giving life and nurturing life. And motherwort invites us all into being mothered again by the world itself, no matter how we were mothered by the one who brought us into it. And in receiving that nurturing, receiving that warm embrace, then we have more nurturance to give. And so just as the oak teaches that solidity of the masculine nurturing, the motherwort teaches the embrace of the of mothering.
So we're inviting motherwort into our council now.
We are.
And then just to start, we're ending, but we're beginning really. Wondering about, you know, the nature of grievance. And at first I did think, like, I don't have grievance. And then we go, oh my goodness, oh, that person did that mean thing years ago. And it's like, oh, we all perhaps have grievance. It's sneaky. And then just for us all, Neptune says, you know, it's like the beautiful, you know, come on in, dissolving, solve a coagula, dissolve and reimagine, liberate past grievances or resentments or who did what or who was mean to, you know, whatever. So, but we do want to make discernments, because I was saying we get to have spicy critique and spicy blessing and grudges perhaps, you know, but grievance, I think right now, just the power of our group, you know, it's the idea, you know, known or unknown, we are willing to dissolve grievance, impediment to kind action in ourself, and the body politic is a good dissolving thing. And then, you know, maybe briefly, because it's so powerful and wonderful, Sean, that the dissolving and the liberating, I'll come back into form here. But your teaching on testosterone and pine bark, and that testosterone is not intrinsically aggressive, it just wolfifies whatever social game we're engaged in. Say what you've been saying, because I think that's so crucial to us now.
Well, and it's really interesting too that I learned this from a voice that I had grievance against.
There we go.
I didn't want to listen to Robert Sapolsky because he was a determinist in a very Richard Dawkins kind of way. And, you know, I guess I now need to pay attention to whether Richard Dawkins has anything to say amongst all the dreck. But I've said that aloud. Yeah. And, you know, he was hanging out with Jordan Peterson, and Jordan Peterson was saying all these awful things. And,
yes, horrible. Yeah. Right.
But then when I listened to what he actually said, which I don't think Jordan Peterson ever did, because Jordan Peterson wouldn't be talking about trans people the way that he does if he had listened to Robert Sapolsky about the infinite variations of testosterone showing up in human beings, and the fact that testosterone does not inherently cause aggression.
Right.
What testosterone does is it invites us to seek success at the cultural game that we're playing. And so he said, if you were to give a monastery full of Buddhist monks a big dose of testosterone, I mean, not as much as would come with steroids, but a bigger than an average human dose, they would then be motivated to go out and do all kinds of random acts of kindness. Yeah.
Right. Peace. Right. No, I think this is so, even if you've cleansed it from Robert Sapolsky into Sean Patrick O'Donohue, and then I've quoted you on this, because I think it's so wonderful when you lay that out. So, because then it makes it clear. So what we all want to do with everything we love in nature is change the game, right? If testosterone woofifies whatever social game we're involved in, and you said if we're in a game that rewards aggression, or it will do that. But yes, the Tibetan Buddhists are like more peace, right? So that then gives us this crucial clue, and see, Saturn and Jupiter are all about games. You know, games have rules and boundaries and changing the game. And now we're back to the inclusivity. And even if we don't know how, we do have a sense of what. To kind of call that in. So there's many places we might want to go, but I do invite us all just now as a little micro dose of releasing, right, to take this on and to wonder, like, I wonder if I have grievance in my heart that is an impediment to blessing someone or something. And it's like, it's fun when you start to go hunting, because it's like, we've outsourced our authority. Whatever gives one a conniption fit, right? It's like, on some level, you know, but at the same time, we do want trickster, prankster, you know, misbehaving and no rules. And I mean, as well, but I think the dissolving of the grievance, because it's so not the same as grief. It's an impediment to grief. Grievance is really hatred, you know, and grief is really kinship and love. So I think that's useful in this Beltane time where so much is possible and we get to invite in everything, and dissolve it and ask it, you know, Mars, you know, what did this want to be before it got sketchy and mean and cruel due to its separation from darkness and beauty and love and support. So there's that dynamic. So are there any, right? We have the I Ching. We may or may not go to the I Ching, but we have 7 more weeks for those who want to join us. But are there any plants who are clamoring, any more plants who are clamoring to come in to our council to send us off into the summer realms? I have mugwort.
Ah, yes, which is so fascinating in that we think of mugwort so often as a plant of the dreaming realm, which is true, but it's also a plant that moves in the other direction. I learned from Matthew Wood that for somebody who is too anchored in the daily reality of this culture, mugwort will help them see beyond it. But for someone who is always drifting off into dream and has a hard time showing up in this world right now, mugwort can ground you in. And one of my favorite ways to work with mugwort in this way is with artists who find that cannabis opens up their creativity, but then they forgot what they envisioned and they can't bring it forth into music or poetry or painting. And so I have them put a little bit of mugwort in with their cannabis, and then fairly reliably that vision from the ethers that they gained through working with cannabis comes into the here and now. And so absolutely, mugwort is a part of both opening the dreaming and grounding the dreaming. But I do also want to call in a whole other group of beings, human and other than human, which are the descendants.
Say that again. What?
The descendants.
Oh, thank you.
We ask, what did it want to be? And that's a question we can ask the ancestors. And that's a question we can reach into, how did this begin, in order to find a little bit of how it went off course. But we can skip ahead. We can ask the people who are around the Beltane fire 100 years from now, and all the plants and animals whose voices are joining with them, to sing a little bit louder so that we can hear the story of how it was that we made it through this time, how it was that we passed between the fires and navigated into a world that survived and blossomed.
Right.
And that dreaming of the future is a very good place to call on Salvia divinorum as a plant of deep, true dreaming, but not the amped up 20 times powered extracts, but the actual leaves of the plant herself.
Right. No, Salvia divinorum, I'm happy to have her called in as a great dreaming plant with boundaries, with lots of manners. I mean, a lot of these plants really, it's great seeing you get darker and darker in your yurt. That's right. That's very wonderful. There we go. And I'm getting lighter and lighter in my room. So we will begin to deconvene because it's dusk where Sean is in his house, right in your yurt. That's really great. But Salvia divinorum, it's a plant, a sacrament with a very strong sense of manners, just like mugwort is dreaming, but it's also protection of boundaries, right? And that's a wonderful thing that is available, you know, dreaming with boundaries and dreaming our boundaries into place. And where do we want to, you know, place boundaries? But I think just to begin these processes, right, to take, you know, a grievance known or unknown and to dissolve it, you know, and to dissolve, you know, like, why not miracles? To dissolve cruelty and dominance out of the human repertoire, just into the cauldron, dissolve that thing. And there's a long note from Jen that I look forward to reading, but it's in the comment section, but we'll send those out. So here we are with quintiles, Mercury, Mars, quintile, woofiness on behalf of eloquence, on behalf of what we love, and the plants coming in, and the realms in which we want to play, you know, are so let's form the government of the animistic governance of, you know, plants. Oops, oh, you're almost completely disappearing. It's almost time to go. It's very exciting, though. I can see your eyes gleaming in the dark. Right? It's excellent. That's good. But the dark was fun too, right?
Yes.
That's super great. So before we call summer in, and we have another Benson song to go out on, you know, is there so many things we talked of, but that here we are, you know. Everywhere I've gone, you know, I have noticed a need for more play. Right. I go to the Goldman Environmental Awards, you know, and I'm pretty woof want to play. And people are like, ooh, you know, and the progressive left shouting, you know, war criminals. It's like more play, more tricks, more things, more wizardry, more witchiness, more calm weaving. You know, the great Terry Pratchett, whose birthday was 2 days ago. You know, I just bring up again, you know, in his last beautiful, beautiful novel, the young man, the young Mars, goes to the witches and says, I want to be a witch. And the witches go, usually men are wizards, but, you know, we're fluid, right? And they notice that everywhere he goes, and this is very in our availability here, everywhere he goes, calm breaks out. You know, he goes to a bar and the locals go, "Dive, dive, those two men are fighting over a woman," right? A courtship, a Beltane gone bad. You know, and people always get hurt, you know. But instead, the young wizard within all of us saunters towards them and says, Good sirs, have either one of you consulted the woman in dispute?" And they're like, "No, that's a good idea," right? Anyway, so the witches say, "You're a calm weaver. Wherever you go, calm. You can be anything you want. Complete. You can be a wizard, a witch. You're a calm. That's what you are. You're a calm weaver, and that's what is a cloak from the ancestors and the descendants. You know, placing around each of our shoulders. Now, may we be calm weavers and playful, and, you know, woof woof, want to play. Whatever we speak to, we're inviting, you know, to the dance. And then we are going to bring summer in." And you had some things you wanted to call in the desirable summer. Just a little more about Beltane, because it's the you take that.
Yes, well, in response to what you're speaking from that beautiful Terry Pratchett novel, it's a very interesting kind of different way of divination. So, like, people will often ask me, "I saw a hawk. What does that mean?" I'd say, "Well, what was your conversation with the hawk? What was happening when the hawk showed up? How did the world change when you saw the hawk?" Don't go pull that book off the shelf. And you can look at a book later and find out what some other people's experiences of hawks were. But the meaning lies in the relation. And I had never thought about the fact that we can actually perform that kind of divination by noticing, what is it that breaks out whenever I show up? How do things change whenever I show up? And what do I want to cultivate in that? And what do I want to shapeshift in that? And so choosing what will grow from the seeds that grew, that slept through the dreaming of winter, what will rise from the roots that are in the dreaming of winter as we come into summer, I think that can be one of the questions we ask. How does my presence change whatever I'm in relation with, and how do I want to continue that, and how do I want to change that? But ultimately, it is the question of the turning of the wheel is a participatory process. It's not that flowers won't blossom if we don't show up, but their experience of blossoming will be different. I think of that wonderful line from Rilke's first Vino Elegy, "Didn't you know the springtime needed you?" And so we reach all the way back to the oldest known song in the Irish tradition, which is the Beltane song, "Hugamar Fain an Sauradin." We ourselves bring the summer with us. And so, as we show up to this moment, who is the we that we bring to bring the summer in? And what summer do we bring in with us?
And you'd want people to type in things or to shout them out or to, we don't know.
Yes.
Vern says, "Saw an egret on Beltane, my solar return." Excellent. Egret. Yes, that's right. And to see, like, well, there's so many things. I'm glad we have 7 more weeks for people to play with us if they so choose, because there is so much play. But I loved how you were working with people with tobacco, you know, and you said, people come to you going, "I want to quit." And you were like, slow down, go back. And because I think this applies to everything, what you said, go back and think about what benefit do you get from this plant, and remember that it's a protector. Yes. And then you'd said, you know, think of your 4 most important cigarettes, you know, And I think we could do, think of your four most important grievances, or think of your, you know, just, I mean, anything, you know, going, how do we turn toxin into tonic, you know, but what is the apparent benefit that may want to be rerouted? And then you'd said to the people, you know, the next time you smoke anything, well, but tobacco, you know, see it or her, you know, see it, God, El and Mayan, it's a God, you know, behind you as a protector. I love that. And I think that just, we can tease that into so many things. Like, what is it you're getting from this, you know, and dissolve that and liberate the entire partnership. And I look forward to working with you to customize the smoking blend, you know, that you,
yes,
you guide people and their own autonomy to putting together the herbs that will be beneficial. Because we like, some of us like smoking. Yeah.
Yes. And so it's, yes, we're in relation with something because there was a mutual call to relation.
That's great.
So what's the nature of that call? Mm-hmm. And how do we make that relationship healthy and responsive?
And then just, you know, as we're beginning to deconvene, but it's a never-ending story, really, you know, Saturn in Pisces says, you know, yes, you know, critique is important of all beings. And then also for each of us, what is our ideal definition of wise leadership? You know, it's like we know what we don't want, but it's like define the thing, because right now some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. It's like, this is what we're calling in. You know, what is that quality of wise leadership to be quickened, not in one person, right? As you know, in Brecht's play Galileo, right, the person, the acolyte going, oh, be a hero, happy the country that has its hero. And the Galileo character says, happier more is the country that needs no hero, right? That leadership born within each citizen, leadership born within each citizen, to inhale our Saturn authority, you know, and come into accord as equals and agents of nature at this powerful time, and on like that. So we call in and then end with the Bengtson's beautiful song that's very Beltane-like?
Yes, please.
Are we beauty, laughter, and play? Thank you, Sandra Del Castillo. Yes, we're calling in beauty, laughter, and play. And oh, backstage badger maestro, we are ready for our Bengtson's garden song, which reminds us of gratitude and beauty and collaboration and cahooting. So here we go. Thank you, Tim.
Woke up this morning and there was food on my plate. Celebrate, celebrate. And everything on that plate was there because it grew. Hallelujah, hallelujah. And everything that grew had to first be planted in the dark, a little spark. And everything that was planted in the dark had to first be imagined in the dark. And everything imagined in the dark had to first be imagined by someone. Oh, someone who remembered that the future is the garden of the past. Someone who remembered there was a hunger and it was coming and coming fast. Someone who was willing to go down into their dark with roots and seeds for a future they would never see. For a future they would never see. Was it you? Was it you? Was it you who remembered what to do? I think it was you. I'm pretty sure that it was you, honey. I think it was you who knew what to do. Come on. Hey, you know well, I woke up this morning and, well, there was food on my plate. Thank you. I'm gonna celebrate. Let's celebrate. Everything on that plate was there because it grew. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, yes. And everything that grew was planted in the darkness. And everything that was planted in the dark had to first be imagined in the dark, like a spark of the mind or of the heart. And everything imagined in the dark, oh, it has to be imagined by someone. By someone. Oh, someone who remembers that the future is the garden of the past. Someone who remembers that the future is coming, and it's coming fast. Oh, she's coming fast, you know. Oh, someone who said, yes, I'll go down into the darkness with only roots and a handful of seeds and plant a future I will never see. I'm gonna plant a future I will never see. You know, I think it was you. It was you, wasn't it? I think it was you. I think it was you who remembered what to do. I think it was you, yeah. I think it was you, yeah. I think it was you, beloved. I think you know what to do. And honey, oh honey, I'm gonna meet you in the garden. I wanna meet you in the garden. In the garden.
Whoa. Thank you, team. We're out. Good night, team. That was a beautiful, beautiful closing. I think it was you. We think it was you. It's all of us. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Stanka Foyle. Ah.